Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams and start getting to a healthier weight and a healthier you so you can get on with your life. If you'd like to join me today, the number here at the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to know what is on your mind. And just so you know, if I'm talking to another caller, wait till I'm done with the caller because I'm the one who answers the phone myself and I can't actually pick up and put someone on hold. If I do that, I cut off the first caller. Okay, so this is a question from Kate on Instagram. And she asks, what is your best advice for people to stay on track over the holidays? What is your best advice for people to stay on track over the holidays? Great question, Kate. First of all, remember, this is something I talked about more at length last week, but the holidays are not from Halloween to New Year's. The holidays are actually a few days sprinkled in there. So it's just a handful of days that you've got to deal with the holidays. Yes, there are parties and yes, there are celebrations, but it's not like 2 months of nonstop like eating problems. So keep in mind that you're really just dealing with a few days and make a plan for each of those days. And one of the things that you should do when you make that plan is not restrict. Don't skip breakfast and lunch because you're going to be going to a big dinner. You know, don't restrict during the day because you know you're going to a party. What happens when you do that is it totally backfires. You're like, oh, I'm saving calories. I'm going to be so good. Like, I'll somehow, you know, the calories I'm not eating, well, I'll be able to make up for it when I have dinner. And what happens is you get so ravenous, you get so hungry that by the time you start eating, it is pretty hard to stop. So do not restrict. Do not diet. The other thing you want to do is challenge the attitude of deprivation. A lot of people have this notion that they shouldn't have something, right? There's the category of foods that are good and the category of foods that are bad. And if they have something bad, then they've blown it and they might as well have more of it because they're never going to have it again until they've lost X many pounds. Sound familiar? So it doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. The anticipation or the experience of deprivation, which is I shouldn't have that Christmas cookies or cake or whatever it is that you think you're not supposed to have, it only makes you want it more. And when you have your mind focused on what you're not supposed to be eating, you got food on the brain all day instead of what's eating at you. Or better yet, instead of being in the moment with people and relating and having fun, hopefully, and all of that. So the best thing you can do, Kate, is to stay on track. Don't think of it as on track. Think of it as, I am going to make healthy choices for myself. I am not going to deprive myself. And I'm going to trust myself that if I have a bite or a piece of whatever, pie, cake, cookies, that doesn't mean that I've blown it, all is lost, and I might as well have the whole thing. So watch the all or nothing response that a lot of people have. Kate, I don't know if that resonates with you, but I'm sure it resonates with a lot of people who are listening and watching. And here's my first caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. Hello? Hello, hello? Can you hear me? Doesn't seem like this caller can hear me. Let's see. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Ronan or Alan, my engineers, if you can hear this, help. Caller, hold on. Ronan's coming in. Ronan to the rescue. Caller, can you hear me? Sorry, guys. Let's see. He's trying to figure it out. Bear with me. Hopefully. There we go again. Okay. Hold on, caller. I have Ronan in the studio, and he is doing his thing. All right, let's see if this works. Caller, can you hear me? No. Okay, caller, Ronan the engineer is going to try to figure out what's going on, and I'll let you know when it's good to call back. In the meantime, I'm going to move on with talking about triggers. So most of the time, you know, people think that they're being triggered by food. They're actually being triggered by situations. Remember, food is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. It distracts you from the real problem. It provides temporary comfort, numb, distracting, something symbolic, but it is not the problem, the main problem, even though it sure feels like it. So the real problem is whatever difficult in your life, whatever's causing you anxiety. Maybe you're in a relationship that's not going so well. Maybe you're not in a relationship and you would like to be. Maybe you are so done with being single. Maybe your boss is driving you crazy. Maybe your kids are driving you crazy. You get the idea. So to change emotional eating, you have to get very clear on what's eating at you. So think about what situations, places, or feelings make you reach for food. What situations, places, or feelings? Caller, if you are listening, Ronan is still doing his thing. Okay, so maybe the trigger is your emotions. Eating can be a way to temporarily silence or stuff down, right? If you stuff down your feelings, uncomfortable emotions like anger, fear, sadness, anxiety, loneliness, resentment, shame, all of those are really unpleasant to feel. And so we distract ourselves with the comfort of food. Or what we do is we displace our feelings. So let's say we're upset at someone else, but it's hard to be upset at someone else, or you feel guilty about being upset at someone else, or you don't want to be angry at anyone, or whatever it is. So then you eat whatever you think you shouldn't eat. And by the way, this is not necessarily conscious. It's not like you're going, okay, I'm going to eat this so I don't feel that. What happens is you end up displacing resentment or whatever that should be towards someone else out there. It boomerangs back on you. So when you're numbing yourself with food, think about what is this doing for me? What am I not feeling as a result? And if you get mad at yourself for eating whatever, ask yourself, if I were not mad at myself for eating whatever, or what would I be mad at? Who or what? It's interesting. I have a lot of people feel very powerless with the political situation in our country. And I've noticed that feelings of powerlessness and helplessness over, the calling number is not working, feelings of powerlessness or helplessness over the world, our political situation, what's going on, gets turned into feelings of powerless or helplessness over food, because it is easier to focus on that. It's easier to be like, oh, I can, in a perfect world, control what I'm eating. I can't control what is going on with the president or Congress or what have you. So think about whatever it is that you would be feeling towards other people or situations when you start attacking yourself. Another reason why people turn to food is out of boredom, or they think it's boredom, but often boredom is a cover for loneliness, emptiness. So if you ever eat just to give yourself something to do or to relieve your boredom, remember that the answer to boredom, which is I need something to do, I'm bored, the answer to boredom is to do something. So if that something is going into the pantry, think about something else you can be doing other than that. Often we think we're bored when we're really lonely or empty. So the answer to loneliness is to be with someone else, right? So if you're lonely, reach out to someone, reach out to a friend, reach out to someone online. There's always someone available somewhere, whether you know that person well or not. There are Facebook groups, there are all kinds of message boards, there are places where you can find someone else out there that you can connect with. The other answer to loneliness is to create solitude, right? So the difference between loneliness and solitude is this. Loneliness is when you feel lonely, that horrible ache of loneliness. And should I answer it? No. Caller, Ronan is still working. Okay. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. Can you hear me? I can hear myself, but no, it doesn't look like it. Hello? Hi, you're on with Dr. Nina. Can you hear me? No. Sorry, guys. All right, Ronan is on the case. He's going to do his thing. Hopefully, he will get this handled so we can get these, a lot of you are trying to call in. Isn't that just the way, you know, everyone wants to call in today and the phones are down. Oh, boy, hate it when that happens. But Ronan is going to hopefully be able to fix it. Let's see. Hi, you're on with Dr. Nina. Can you hear me?
Hello, Dr. Nina.
Hi, can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
All right. Now I can hear you, but
hello?
Apparently you cannot hear me.
Hello.
Yeah. All right. So now I can hear the caller, hello, and the caller can't hear me, Ronan, if you're listening. All right. I'm just going to continue. So the difference between loneliness and solid, don't take calls. Okay. I'm not taking calls. The difference between loneliness and solitude is that loneliness is when you're alone with without a part of yourself that can be nurturing and available and loving and supportive and cheerleading and there, right? You're just alone with kind of a nothing feeling. It's the worst. Solitude is when you're alone with a part of you that is available, that is understanding, that is nurturing, that is supportive, that is kind. Often, we are alone with the part of ourselves that is mean. You know, the mean voice comes up. That's why I tell people, by the way, when you're starting the process of changing and healing and liberating yourself from eating issues, do not meditate. Everyone out there will tell you to meditate. I'm telling you, don't meditate, because all that happens is then you meditate, unless it's maybe a guided meditation that really captures your interest. Meditation just leaves you alone with yourself, and usually that's alone with your mean voice, and that is exactly what makes you turn to food. So don't meditate yet when you first start. So the idea is to be able to respond to the boredom, the loneliness, and the other aspect of boredom is emptiness. Often we say we're bored when we really feel empty, when we feel a lack of purpose or a lack of meaningfulness in our lives, and that's really painful. So when you feel that, although I know you want to get away from it, remember that you can feel it, It's not going to always feel that way. The more that you think about what would be meaningful for me, what do I want more of? What is missing in my life? It's hard to think about it. It's a lot easier to think about calories, carbs, and fat grams. It is hard to think about a loss or a lack of meaning in your life. But the more you think about it and think about how you're going to close up that hole within, that hole in your soul, the more you think about it, the more you'll be able to come up with solutions. And it's a process. So most emotional eating is because of difficult or painful situations, but it can also be triggered by reward or celebration. So think back to your childhood memories of food and eating. Did your parents reward you for dessert? For example, so many people have had this experience. For the amazing accomplishment of eating all your dinner, you get dessert. Ugh. The worst. If you eat all your dinner, you can have dessert. If you eat all your dinner, you can have ice cream. Here is why that is really terrible. So terrible. If you do this to your kids, don't do it anymore. If someone did that to you, let's unlearn it. First of all, kids know when they're hungry and when they're full. And when they get rewarded for eating everything on their plate, they're going to start losing touch with their inner experience of being satiated, of satiety. They're going to lose touch with their intuitive knowledge of when they are full. And then they learn to ignore those signals that says, okay, I'm done here. And worse, they're going to start thinking of dessert as a reward. And by the way, it doesn't always have to be dessert. Maybe they got pizza as a special treat. Maybe you baked cookies with your parent. I'm not going to say mom because it could be your dad. Maybe you baked cookies with one of your parents when you were sad. So these habits then carry over into adulthood where you start to associate, I've had a bad day, I need a reward with food. Food is the easy reward. And eating can also be driven by nostalgia. Maybe you remember going to your grandmother's house and she would make these elaborate Italian lasagna dinners and you loved your grandmother and you missed your grandmother. And so eating big elaborate Italian dinners brings you back to a sense of connection with your grandma. So really look at what are your associations? What are the triggers? So the trigger would be, the trigger is what's going on, that the solution is the food. And you want to look at what is causing you to create that solution. It's a solution to what problem? Another trigger is social influence, right? You get together, and this is big over the holidays, right? You get together with everybody for a meal, and everyone's like, oh, it's so good to see everyone. Let's just eat and drink and have this and that. And there's like this celebration kind of, especially over the holidays, sort of celebration air, and this idea of, oh, it's just tonight. We'll take it easy tomorrow night, but that's not how it works out. So if you overeat in social situations because everyone is having a good time, or you overeat because you have social anxiety, or maybe, you know, there's just this sort of pressure to have more and more and more. Oh, I baked this pie for you. What, you're not going to have it? Don't break my heart. You can have a piece, right? That kind of pressure, that can also lead to overeating, because then that thing happens, right? Where you're like, oh, okay, I'll have a piece. And then you have a piece, and it's kind of good, and you haven't had anything good in a while, so you have a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and then you're hating yourself. So when you recognize the trigger situation, you can strategize some different responses aside from food to deal with those situations. And if you don't know what that is, imagine this. Take your situation and think about if it were happening to a friend or your sister or someone you love and care about. So if this person says, I just can't deal with my boss. She is such a control freak. I dread going to work every single day. I hate my job. Would you say, oh, here, have some cookies, have some ice cream, let's go get tacos? Hopefully not. Better to let her talk. Better to listen and let her talk about how she feels. Tell her, of course, it's horrible. Validate, right? Of course you feel this way. You have a horrible boss. She's a control freak. Nobody likes a control freak. And normalize that she feels this way. Who wouldn't feel that way with a control freak boss, right? If you then you do that to yourself, when you feel upset because of your control freak boss or any other situation in your life, then you can say to yourself, yeah, honor your feelings. Don't try to dismiss them. A lot of people will try to dismiss feelings. Be like, oh, it's not so bad. It could be worse. It could be worse, by the way, are four of the most dismissive words. All it means is don't feel that way. It could be worse. Don't feel that way, right? Maybe it could be worse, but how it is bad. How it is affecting you. That's what matters. You know, we had the fires a few weeks ago, and one of my daughter's friends, her house built, you know, burnt to the ground. It's just ashes. Just like all that's left is like part of a chimney. It's so horrible and sad and awful. And another one of her friends had her house ruined with the house is still standing, but it's ruined with smoke and things melted, and it's just awful. And people tell her family, oh, well, at least your house is still there. At least it didn't burn down. Like, oh, yes, let's be grateful that our house didn't burn down, and we shouldn't complain that we have to move out for 4 months while everything is fixed within it because the house didn't burn down, but it's pretty much wrecked. Right? When you say it could have been worse, so what? It always can be worse. What matters is how you're feeling. Okay, that was a total tangent. But, Ronan is telling me that the phones are now working. So callers, if you'd like to call back, hopefully the seventh time will be the charm, and it'll work. So go ahead and give me a call, 818-602-4929. Ronan is assuring me that it is working. If you want to call in, call in. Otherwise, I am going to continue, because this brings me to a question from a listener who did not give her name. I'm assuming it's she, but I could be wrong. So this no-name person of indeterminate gender says, I'm so confused about how to eat. I've been dieting my whole life, and I realize I have no idea what I'm supposed to eat or not eat. Some people say, stay away from gluten or sugar. Others say, it's okay to have a little bit of everything. What's normal when it comes to food? This is a very similar question that one of our regular callers, Nick, asked, I think it was last week. Like, what do I eat? You know, if all your life you've been thinking about what not to eat, how do you know what to eat? So I am going to give an answer to this question from a dietitian named Ellen Satter. Ellen Satter from the Ellen Satter Institute. And her answer to the question of what the heck is normal eating is this. She says, and this is all her, what I'm about to read. Normal eating is being able to eat when you're hungry and continue eating until you're satisfied. It's being able to choose food you like and truly get enough of it, not just stop eating because you think you should. Normal eating is being able to use some moderate constraint in your food selection to get the right food, but not being so restrictive that you miss out on pleasurable foods. Normal eating is giving yourself permission to eat sometimes because you're happy, sad, bored, or just because it feels good. Yeah, sometimes we just want to have an ice cream, right? And if you have it and you enjoy it, okay, that's part of normal eating. It's when you're eating it to change the way you feel emotionally that it becomes a problem. And when by eating it you feel shame or guilt, then it's a problem. Back to Ellen Satter. Normal eating is eating three meals a day most of the time, But it can also be choosing to munch or graze throughout the day. It is leaving some cookies on the plate because you know you can have some tomorrow. Or it's eating more now because they taste so wonderful when they are fresh. Normal eating is overeating at times, feeling stuffed and uncomfortable at times. It's also undereating at times and wishing you had more. Normal eating is trusting your body to make up for your mistakes in eating. I wonder what she would think about. How would she define mistakes? Not sure. Normal eating takes up some of your time and attention, but it keeps its place as only one area in your life. This is so, so important. So much of the time, the idea of what to eat, what to not eat, becomes a preoccupation. It consumes us. We're preoccupied by it. When you're eating breakfast, you're thinking about what you're going to have at lunch. When you're having lunch, you're thinking about dinner. When you're having dinner, you're thinking about later that night or the next day. It's always on your mind, and it's not good. There are other things you have to think about, right? So we want to make food just normalize food, not use it to feel better or to distract or numb or fill a void. When you do that, you have lots of other things to think about and lots of other things to do. Back to Ellen Satter. Normal eating is flexible. It varies in response to your schedule, your hunger, and your proximity to food. So, what do you think of this? Did any of that surprise you? I find that many times people think, wait, what? Like, normal eating is not, you know, don't eat carbs. Normal eating is not be clean or all of these things. You can find out more from Ellen Satter at the Ellen Satter Institute. And by the way, I also want to share some of the ideas and philosophies at that institute, because it's an important thing to think about. So at the Institute, they believe eating can and should be joyful. They believe bodies are designed to know how much to eat, and we really do lose touch with that and stop accordingly. We know how much to eat. We also know what to eat. We just lose touch with that knowledge because we get so much into our heads. They believe that understanding and supporting positive eating relationships is the key to avoiding eating struggles. And they believe that people are healthier in all ways when they eat with practicality, trust, and enjoyment. I mean, does that sound as if it's in the realm of possibility, or does that all sound like a crazy and impossible dream? You tell me. Give me a call. Share your thoughts. 818-602-4929. Ronan says that the phone lines are working. Let's test that out. Give me a call and let's see what's on your mind. Personally, I think this all sounds really great, but it's how do you get from where you are to where you want to be? And that means really changing your relationship to yourself. Because when you can be kind to yourself, supportive to yourself, nice to yourself in many ways, then you don't need food for that purpose. You don't need food to get away from yourself, whether you're turning to it, from it, or to and from it. Whatever's going on, there's a reason, right? And if you can find another way to respond to yourself, then you don't need the drive-through, the fridge, the pantry, the takeout, what have you. Okay, here is a question from Randy in Malibu, Randy with an I. And Randy, I hope your house in Malibu is safe. This message came in a few weeks ago, like before the fire. So Randy, I hope you're doing well. Okay, she says, I feel totally powerless over food. I have no control. What can I do other than dieting and willpower to keep me in line and reach my weight loss goals? Well, the thing is, Randy, maybe you're feeling powerless over food for a reason. Maybe it's easier to think about how you're powerless over food than in other areas of your life, which is what I was talking about earlier. You know, whether you're feeling powerless over food, whether you're constantly thinking about what to eat, there is a different solution than willpower to help you reach your goals. Because I am not a fan of willpower. Who wants to get up every day and go, I'm going to be good and I'm not going to have that and I will have that. And just feel like you're at war with yourself. You're at war with the world. You know, that you have to be so careful and think about it so much and deny yourself. And then if it slips and you feel bad about yourself and then you have shame and guilt, willpower is not the way to go. So, you know, in working with people all over the world, in private therapy through my online course, which is called Kick the Diet Habit, if you guys are interested, I developed a list of coping strategies that help lots of people change the way that they respond other than turning to food. So if you eat when you're stressed, it's difficult to stop that habit because food does something for you that's very powerful, right? It's a frenemy. It helps you escape painful, upsetting emotions, but it also hurts you. So it is a friend and an enemy. And in terms of what it does as a friend, we can find other ways of accomplishing that. And don't worry, I am not going to suggest taking a bubble bath. I can't tell you how many people have been told, oh, when you feel like eating, take a bubble bath. What? Okay. So keep in mind, there are two ways to deal with feelings. You can express them or you can distract from them. So if you have kids, if you had kids, if you have been around kids, if you remember being a kid, think about how kids manage feelings. They feel them. They feel them. Like, you know, if they're sad, they cry, they wail, they carry on. When they're happy, you know, they're happy, they're super happy. When they're mad, oh, you know it, right? And then they're done. Then they're done. And it's on to the next. So, I am certainly not suggesting that you bawl like a child or, you know, beat your fists on the floor like you're having a tantrum, like I have seen in many a Target aisle in the kids section. No, you may not have that toy. Anyway, here are some other ways of expressing or soothing yourself other than food. So first of all, these are ways to express your feelings. Remember, it's either you express them or you distract from them. That's the bubble bath thing. But okay, here are some other things you can do. Now, the first thing is it's called let it rip. Let it rip. So you write down all your feelings on a blank piece of paper. All of them. All the bad, awful, horrible feelings that you're feeling, you write them down, everything you can think of, and then you rip the paper into shreds. Now, this may sound a little silly as I'm saying it. I'm kind of like, this sounds a little silly, but I'm telling you, it works. When I was in grad school, many of my colleagues were having huge anxiety about our upcoming board exams and just various things. And we all had a party one day. we all got together and we wrote down all our fears and anxieties on a piece of paper. We ripped them into shreds and some people burned them and flushed them down the toilet. Yeah, either way. Either rip them into shreds or flush them down the toilet. Don't set fire to your house. God, I have a fire motif today. Anyway, that is, it feels surprisingly satisfying. And, you know, the only way to know for sure is to give it a try. I'm telling you, there's something just so liberating about ripping up that paper. It's like saying no to your fears, your anxieties, your bad feelings. No, you're in control of them. Also, go back to the future. Think about a situation in the past that seemed really dire at the time, but eventually it worked out. Maybe even it worked out for the best. Maybe even it worked out better than if it hadn't happened. So what would you tell your younger self about that situation before it was resolved from the perspective of the present? Like, what lesson did you learn about yourself when you look back at this difficult time in your life? chances are you learned something. You learned that you were stronger than you thought. You learned you had tenacity. You learned you had courage. You learned that there were people there to help you. Something of that nature. And now, you know, trust that now talk to your present self. Remember that whatever you're going through, there will be a time when you're past it. There will be a time that you're past it, and there will be a time when you feel better. So it's really important to remember that you have been through tough things in the past, and you will get through whatever tough thing is in front of you right now. Another thing that you can do to express your feelings, I call it do the right thing, W-R-I-T-E. Journaling and writing helps you access and express thoughts and emotions. In fact, there are studies that scientifically prove that journaling is beneficial. There's something about getting it out, and that's why that first Let It Rip works. There's something about getting it out, putting it on paper, that you know, better out than in. And it's beneficial. So journaling also does not mean you have an actual journal with a little lock or a really cool whatever that someone might find. There are a lot of online journaling sites, and some of them give you the option to be private or anonymous. They also give you the option to connect with other people on the journaling site and be part of a community. So I really suggest that you give it a try. Try getting those feelings out, because when they're stuck inside you, it's horrible, and it doesn't go anywhere. You want to get it out. And if you're not sure what to write about, I have some prompts, like, what qualities do you appreciate most about yourself? How did you decide that you weren't good enough? Where did you get that idea? What does silence feel like to you? What place on earth would you most like to visit, and why? Do you have recurring dreams? If so, what are they? Those are just a few prompts to get you thinking about, you know, what's going on inside. When you get it out, you don't feel it anymore. You know, when the other day I was in group, and I said, when you speak it, you will not stuff it. When you speak it, you won't stuff it. Got to make a post about that, but think about that. When you speak it or write it, you will not stuff it. How are we doing on time? Okay. Another thing to do is, if someone has hurt you and you have feelings about how someone has acted towards you or dismissed you or something painful has happened between you and another person, write a letter. Write a letter, identify what you're feeling, let them have it, tell them how you feel, tell them exactly what you think of them, exactly what you want to happen to them, tell them everything, and then don't send it. Well, unless you want to, but I recommend not sending it. But you get out those feelings. You express them, right? You're like, you did this to me, you son of a bitch, and this is what I think of you, or you bitch, or whatever. And this is what I think about you. When you did this, I felt this because it means that. And that was wrong. Whatever it is that you want to say, in whatever way, say it. Get it out. And you can also write to someone who's no longer in your life, whether because they're no longer in your life or maybe because they've passed away. But writing your truth, your true truth, in whatever way that just comes out. It doesn't have to be grammatically correct. You can be profane. You can say whatever the heck you want. Just say it. Say it, say it, say it. Write it. And in that vein, also blog it. You know, like if something is going on in your life, like say you're having some really bad dating experiences, or maybe you're interested in something that so you've always wanted to learn how to do calligraphy or play the piano, or you want to know everything there is to know about jet skiing. There is a blog on every subject in the world, and you can either find that blog, connect with that blog, express how you know, write to the person, start your own blog, express something, get interested in other parts of your life other than the parts that are causing you to turn to food. If all you have is kind of a critical voice that's going, you shouldn't eat that, or you're not good enough, or you're only going to be good enough when you lose weight, or no one will like you at this weight, you've got to cultivate a different attitude towards yourself. You've got to cultivate interests so you have something on your mind other than food, and you got to connect with other people who are interested in that same thing. Being creative also has huge benefits. In fact, the American Journal of Public Health published a review, and it's called The Connection Between Art, Healing, and Public Health. They analyzed more than 100 studies. Up, oh, a caller, let's test this out. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. No, Ronan, if you're listening, it's not working. Not working. Can't hear anyone. Sorry, caller. I think this is Nick. Sorry, Nick. Let's see. Nick, stay online because I got Ronan doing his thing remotely. let's see. Bear with me, guys. Hello, Nick? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
I can hear you.
You can hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you. Hallelujah.
Oh,
it's a miracle.
You know,
yay!
This is really interesting about writing a letter or writing down things that you fear. They say in the other line, other side, we have they can't hear me.
Who can't hear you?
Okay, whatever. I'm fine.
I can hear you.
You can hear?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, like situations and with food, always with food. I'll start off with just a little story that, you know, when I was a kid, you had to eat everything on your plate. You talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a must. You eat all, you know, your mother made food, you eat it all. And it got to be, with my brother, competition. You know, who could eat more?
Wow.
And growing up doing that, but getting to it was what you were saying, but I have a child who I have a problem with, and we don't talk. And now I have a situation with my daughter because of what I said to my son, blocking him off, not speaking to him because it's not healthy. She's now turning that on to me.
Okay.
And I don't know what makes me feel better. Would it make me feel better writing a letter to her, not sending it?
Or sending it. I mean, there are some cases in which sending it might be helpful. Sometimes people get so triggered by and reactive that when you talk to them, they can't really hear you. But if you put your position calmly in a letter, this would be a different kind of letter, right? This would not be the,
right,
and you did this and you did that and
right.
Right? This would be the, look, here's the facts. This is what happened. This is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
This is why. You know, now you have all the facts. So maybe you want to write two letters. One is to your daughter saying, look, this is why I cut off your brother. This is what he was doing. This is what I tolerated for X amount of time. This is an example of what I mean. And, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, you haven't been able to understand my perspective. Hopefully now you do. That's one letter. The other letter that you don't send is, daughter, what the hell? You know,
right.
And then you say whatever it is that you're feeling, right?
Yeah. It sounds good. I'm just afraid. I don't want to cause any more trouble. You know, I could do that, send a letter to her, but she's pretty tough, and the situation is that she doesn't understand the situation. She sees me having a problem with my son, so she's just going to stick up for her brother.
Yeah, but as
and that's what she's doing.
I think you've shared that he's said some things and texted you things that are just truly horrific. So maybe what you want to do is, if you have screenshots of those, or if you still have that in your text link, or if you have anything, maybe you want to send her an example of why you are cutting him off. And just in a very calm way, say, look, this is verbally abusive or emotionally abusive, as I recall, verbally and emotionally abusive, and I'm not going to tolerate it. You know, this is a response. This is an important part. This is a response, a reaction to his provocation. This is not an action, right? It's a reaction. You're not doing this to him. You're reacting to something he did to you. A very important distinction.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. All right. I and food is, and all this, you know, it's, I think of other things, and so a lot of those things are, this may be way out, but I think about food.
Well, if you were, you know? Yes, because thinking about food is like thinking about a way out. It's a distraction. If you're thinking about food, you're not thinking about how hurt and possibly angry you are with your daughter. If you're thinking about food, you're not thinking about how disappointed you are with your son. Or maybe other, you know, who knows what else is going on in your life, right? It's a safe way to distract from feelings and thoughts that make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But all it does is hurt you, and it doesn't change anything. It just makes you feel bad about yourself. So that's right. Why when you look at, okay, I'm thinking about food, that means something's eating at me. What if I were not thinking about food, what would be on my mind? So, Nick, if you were not thinking about food, what would be on your mind?
Right now, I'd be thinking about taking care of myself, like the walking. I look forward to that every day, and I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but that's what I'm looking forward to these days.
Yay!
That type of thing.
Yes.
And I enjoy I watch sports. I mean, who knows? But go to the movies, and I just find things to do.
Okay, so those are all wonderful things. And to have you go from, I can't get myself out of the house to go walking, to, I'm looking forward to walking and taking care of myself. That's amazing. However, let me put it a different way. If you were not thinking, oh, and we only have a couple more minutes, but let's just go right up until the end. If you were not thinking about food, what would you be worried about? What would you be anxious about?
I guess my relationship. Another relationship I have.
Okay.
But I don't know what I would be thinking about. You got me there. Help me here.
Yeah. So.
I mean, I'm thinking about so many crazy things. Okay, whether it's a relationship here, my kid, make sure I walk now, make sure I do this. So I keep my mind busy. So at the point of the kids, I mean, I just want to hell with them, you know. I'll just have to roll with it. I mean, that's it. I just have to keep on going and not, you know,
there's what to
think
do.
About it all day long.
No, there's what to do. I mean, see, if you don't think about it, if you tell yourself, I'm not going to think about it all day, and you push it aside, then you're thinking about food. But if you just say, man, am I pissed off at my kids? They don't understand, and they're emotional bullies or whatever it is that, you know, I'm disappointed in them, I'm mad at them, I'm hurt by them, and you let yourself feel it, then you're not feeling it anymore. The only way to get rid of feelings is to feel it. Nick, I am so sorry you've taken us to the... Thank you for calling in and being persistent. And unfortunately, we're at the end of the show, but will you call in next week and we'll talk more about this?
I look forward to it.
Okay, go write your letters.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye for now.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. And thank you to all the other people who tried to call in. I saw you come up on screen and just, I'm sorry we didn't get to you. Please try next week. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thank you for joining me today here on LA Talk Radio. I'm here every Wednesday at 10. And you can, if you like some of these strategies that I mentioned, you can also go on my website, Dr. Nina Inc., and download the Stop Stress Eating Guide, the 25 Ways to Cope Without Food. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.